Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, K Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Kevin driving another great Sunbury Motors vehicle this week.
Yeah, this week we're featuring the Ford Fiesta, the 2015 Ford Fiesta, where gas mileage around town is already up above the 30s on day two of driving it around. One of the things I noticed right away was plenty of ports to charge everything you need. Two accessory ports, one in the front, one in the back seat, and then two USB connections to go right to the Ford MyTouch screen. That's a 6.5-inch screen on the dash that can control everything you need it to control, and also have the ability to have sync in there. And if you are so inclined, you can get an even smaller engine for even better gas mileage with the 5-speed. The 5-speed manual has a 1-liter 3-cylinder engine available. That's in the 2015 Ford Fiesta. And right now, you can sign and ride for absolutely nothing. Find out more by visiting Sunbury Motors in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury, or check out my Facebook page or at Kevin Herr on Twitter for the details on the 2015 Ford Fiesta.
All right. The Indiana law is already having ramifications. NASCAR, by the way, came out with a rather strong statement about that. And remember, they have the Brickyard 400 there. There's been no response at all from IndyCar. Zero. But NASCAR's come out with a rather strong statement about that.
Well, it's already, not like they're going to move anything.
Well, you can.
You're going to move the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
You can move the race.
No, you can't.
Okay. Well, you say so.
I mean, I'm sorry. I have to disagree with you there. You can't move that from the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. That's going to be a tough sell for a lot of people. I understand the desire to, and maybe the desire to speak your opinion on it as IndyCar, or, you know, as a business, and the way the NCAA has mentioned it as well. I just don't see them moving the Indy 500.
I'm saying you could. I didn't say you will.
Okay.
You could. Okay? It's not like it's the only racetrack in America. But it'll be interesting to see that if they don't make any changes, okay, how much attendance is hurt.
That's a very good point.
Wilco concert already canceled. Comedy show with Nick Offerman and his wife Megan Mullally from Will and Grace. They already canceled out. Ask Me conference canceled out. Angie's List expansion conference canceled out. Tech conference sponsorship canceled out. Debate competition. The National Forensic Association pulled out. Already, this has already happened within 24 hours. On top of that, you already have the governor of Washington and the mayor of Seattle saying no official travel will be allowed with funds to go to Indiana. It's governor of Connecticut, no funds will be allowed to send anybody to Indiana. Organizers of Gen Con, largest gaming convention in the country, pulled out. And Governor Cuomo of New York, no official travel to Indiana. Whether this is interpreted correctly or not has now become irrelevant. Whether it's been reported correctly or not is irrelevant. This is now snowballing in a bad direction for the state. Because they've done it. Indiana has done a great job over the years. And I mentioned this earlier of, you know, we're going to be the amateur sports capital of the world. That's why they brought the Pan Am Games there. Now, the Pan Am Games now has become a whatever. But it was still the intent that they were going to go all in. They were going to go all in. Well, they've gone all in to the point where, obviously, they've lured the Colts from Baltimore to Indianapolis. The Pacers have been there the entire time, and now that they've been winning and good, now this year is not a great year with Paul George hurt, but they've been a major draw. You've had the Brickyard 400, the Indianapolis 500, and a less than successful Formula One race there. Okay? Well, at least you've had it. You have the Final Four there every 5 years with the NCAA headquarters lured in. You have had the Super Bowl there. You have the Big Ten football championship game going into its fifth year at Lucas Oil Stadium. The Big Ten men's and women's basketball championships are scheduled to return to Indianapolis next March, and then are scheduled to come back again in 2019 after making stops in Washington and Madison Square Garden. This brings with it, along with the conventions I just mentioned, Indiana. I mean, of all places, Indiana has turned out to be a great convention area. And Indianapolis in particular. Indianapolis is beautifully set up for conventions. Because the way it is set up, you have Lucas Oil Stadium on one side, you have Bankers Life Fieldhouse on the other, and in the quad, you have hotels and restaurants. Harry and Izzy's, St. Elmo's. Some great restaurants. This is a major problem for them right now. Whether or not the press has interpreted the bill or right now has become irrelevant. Okay? Whatever their interpretation is, right or wrong, is actually now irrelevant. It's now being perceived by everyone one way, and that one way is not good. Now, I mentioned the Indianapolis 500. That's still 2 months away. By then, it's going to be straightened out one way or the other. Just like the Big Ten football championship game and the Big Ten men's and women's basketball tournaments. It should be straightened out, you would think, by then, one way or the other, whether it's staying on the current path or changing direction. But it's a big, big deal. And again, Mike Pence says, look, the media's run with it, it's gone this direction. You know what? Once that happens, as we have found out here, right or wrong, when the train decides to leave the station, it is hard to throw yourself in front of the train because, again, there's a pack mentality when it comes to the media. Right? And they get focused and locked in on it. And at that point, right or wrong, facts be damned. We've seen that happen here. And right or wrong, again, I don't know fully what the law says, but if it's interpreted the way it's being reported in the media, well, can't stand for it. Again, as I've said how many times have I said in this show, hey, look, people are people. All right? Life's not a crusade. But it's a big problem. Big problem. And again, even if the media has completely misinterpreted the law, right? Does it matter now? The perception is now out there. Well, we have a lot to talk about here. 800-795-9565. If you'd like to jump in, you want to talk about that, that's fine. Kevin started the show by complaining about Jameis Winston's workout being on TV. Now, if it not first take off the air, isn't that good?
Well, when you look at it that way, I suppose you're right. I did not think of it that way.
You know, there's certain shows I have no interest in. And it doesn't really, it doesn't matter whether I have interest in them or not. Everybody has their own interests. But I've never really had much of an interest in First Take. Never have. Just personal taste. Never had an interest in Sports Nation. I think, what, Michelle Beadle hosts that? Never had an interest in that show. Just never have. Okay, and that's why, look, we have all these channels. We've talked about how, you know, fans around here would love to see more wrestling on TV. Which is great. We have all these channels. Why not? Why not put it on? I mean, I know it doesn't have mass appeal. Even the biggest, single biggest event that wrestling has every year, the NCAA Wrestling Championship. I mean, PTI on Tuesday at 5:30 has 300,000 more viewers than they do. And I'm not speaking out of turn. I'm using actual facts. PTI averages about 975,000 viewers at 5:30 Monday through Friday, which, by the way, is also 2:30 in the afternoon on the coast. So that's not even prime time. I mean, boxing, for example. We talk about boxing being dead. The first Friday night boxing that NBC put on, you know how many viewers that drew?
12.
3.4 million.
You know, speaking of boxing, there's that big one, there's that big fight coming up in May.
Pacquiao Mayweather.
They haven't even announced how much that's going to be in pay-per-view yet.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not sure yet either.
I've heard numbers, but I've heard numbers that are looking at about $70 to even $90 for that pay-per-view fight. Now, in an era where boxing is losing its support as a whole, charging that much for a pay-per-view fight just doesn't seem sensible to me.
But Kevin, Friday night fights with people that nobody heard of got 3.4 million viewers.
But that's free.
I understand that.
I just don't know if people are going to spend $90 or if they're just going to go to a bar and see it there or go to a sports place.
This is a fight that people have heard of.
Agreed.
This is a fight that's hyped. A series of boxing matches on NBC drew 3.4 million viewers. All right. Which is 2.8 million more than the Creme de la Creme NCAA Wrestling Championship drew.
I don't know. I mean, I understand that, you know, that some of these channels are doing well with their Friday night fights. I get that. What I don't see is a lot of mass appeal for boxing as a whole. There's very little reporting on it. You don't often see anything other than a major title fight talked about.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. I agree with you.
But, and I understand this is a big one that everybody's been waiting for. I get all that. I just think, do you really want to charge $75 to $90 to see this fight? Or do you want to make it a sensible pay-per-view along the lines of WWE or UFC, which, by the way, that really is a big seller in pay-per-view, is UFC. Do you want to lower the price a little bit? Don't cross that $50 threshold and have more people watching it and try and create some more interest in the sport that, honestly, to me, seems to... I understand what you're saying about those numbers, but it seems to be, as a whole, it's fading, especially, well, the heavyweight level, it's definitely faded, but...
There's no question about that. But they must have done some market research to think they can get that.
Wow. I would love to watch this fight. I really would. I am not an in-depth boxing fan, and I don't know the ins and outs of every type of belt that's out there, but I do like watching a good boxing match. I can't do it for that price. It's hard to justify that price, even for a fight that I think is going to be is this going to be Hagler Hearns? Is this going to be a Sugar Ray Leonard style fight? Maybe. The last pay per view fight I actually watched and purchased was Holyfield Tyson.
Okay. The last one I saw was Hagler Leonard.
Yeah, there's another one. Yeah, yeah, Hagler Leonard. There was another fight that.
I watched that one. And that was worth every dime. I thought. I walked out of there and went, "Wow, that was some fight."
Actually, there were two fights that I remember watching that were pay per view. And one was Holyfield Tyson with the ear biting incident, and the other one, and honestly, I don't remember who was fighting, and I know you're going to know it right away and tell me, the hang glider fight.
Yeah, that was Tyson and.
It was a Holyfield. Tyson fight. Was it Tyson Holyfield as well?
Yeah.
I just couldn't. I mean, I remember the hang glider coming in, but I don't remember who was fighting it.
Fan man. It's Fan Man. Came in with that fan, you know. Yeah.
But, I mean, there were memorable, you know, there were a lot of fights that you could actually get interested in, and there hasn't been a boxing match that has drawn broad appeal, except for maybe this one. So maybe that's why they're thinking $90 is going to work.
It was Bo Holyfield. Riddick Bowen.
Yes. Holyfield. Yes. 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 Yes.
That's Fan Man. Yeah. So, all right. We'll come back with more in a moment, including Kevin reminisces about the great fights of his lifetime, mostly in the streets, on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Hey, guess what day it is?
Tuesday.
No, it's Hyundai.
Hyundai.
Remember, every day is Hyundai?
Hyundai.
And it's the Lease We Can Do sales event going on now at Sunbury Motors Hyundai.
Hyundai.
The Lease We Can Do is cut the crap and give you low payments and no money down. Lease a 2015 Hyundai Sonata SE for only $237 a month for 36 months with zero down. Zilch. Nada. Or lease a 2015 Hyundai Elantra SE for only $183 a month for 36 months. Again, no money down. Or you could go green. Lease a 2015 Hyundai Sonata Hybrid for $250 a month for 36 months, and you guessed it, zero due at sign. No hidden fees, no plus tax, and blah, blah, blah. It's the lease we can do. These cars are here, these deals are real, and they're only at your home for Hyundai, Sunbury Motors Hyundai,
Hyundai.
In the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, where every day is Hyundai.
Hyundai!
Lease is based on 10,000 miles per year, zero total due assigning with approved HMFR Tier 1 financing tax included. See dealer for complete details.
Welcome back. Great to have you with us. 800-795-9565. You'd like to jump in and talk with us today. Here until 5 o'clock, Stephen Gross, Allentown Morning Call, coming up tomorrow to talk about the Phillies. Our thanks to Charlie Wimuth of BucksDugout.com, talking about the Pirates today. And we'll get to Stephen Gross tomorrow about the Phillies and get their take as we head into the opening weekend of the season, as I watch a rather hefty snowfall happen outside my window right now.
Yeah, actually, here on Blue Hill, looking at about 3 inches already falling. I don't know what it's like in the lower elevations, but, you know, the elevation difference between where the river is and where the studios are located sometimes is a difference of a couple of inches of snow.
Right. So that's where we are right now with snow. And, yeah.
Well, you know, we were talking about the upcoming fight, Mayweather-Pacquiao, and I was thinking back in some of the best fights, and here's the 10 best fights of all time, according to a survey a few years ago by one of the boxing websites. Number 10 was Holmes-Norton from June 78. Then they go to Joe Louis and Billy Kahn in 1941. Let's see. Then Julio Cesar Chavez and Meldrick Taylor won in 1990. A very controversial fight. Let's see. Then you have Aaron Pryor and Alexei Arillo. I don't even remember that one in 1982. Do you remember that one?
Yes, I do.
I don't remember that one. I guess that was the fight right after Sugar Ray Leonard retired because of his detached retina. Diego Corrales and Jose Luis Castillo in 2005. Again, not one that was on my radar. Rocky Marciano and Jersey Joe Walcott was number five. That one was not a big surprise that made the top five. Hagler Hearns from 1985.
Mm-hmm.
Ricky Ward and Arturo Gatti, the first fight back in 2002. That was another one of their... that was actually a really good fight. And the one you and I were talking about at one point, Sugar Ray Leonard, Tommy Hearns in 81. What, and now, can you guess what will be the number one fight?
Ali Frazier.
Which one?
Probably they'll say the one in Manila.
The Thrilla in Manila. That's right. Ali Frazier 3 back in 1975.
I thought the first one was better for me. I mean, they both were great. But the intriguing part was when they fought the first time, Frazier was the champion. Ali had come back, and many thought he'd reclaim it, and Frazier knocked him on his backside in the 15th round. And Ali showed a lot of guts and got up. A lot of people would not have gotten up from that left hook in the 15th.
But you know, on that list of 10, there wasn't a single heavyweight bout within the last about 20 years.
Right, and that's a big issue because it's still, no matter what people say, it's still the glamour weight class, and it doesn't have any glamour to it right now at all. Now, take this show. It's full of glitz and glamour, and more of it's coming up after the news.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Our thanks to Charlie Wilmoth from BucksDugout.com for joining us earlier. Tomorrow, Stephen Gross, Allentown Morning Call on the Phillies. Coming up on Friday, Matt LePay, the play-by-play voice of Wisconsin basketball, and Will Tiemann, the play-by-play voice of Michigan State basketball. Let's go to the phone lines at 1-800-795-9565. Boxing's been the hot topic today. Tony in Shamokin joins us. Hi, Tony.
Good afternoon. That top 10 list you had, that wasn't bad. But the best fight I ever remember seeing on TV was a guy named Joey Giardello from Philadelphia fighting a guy, I think he was from Boston, named Joey Archer.
Okay.
That was constant action from beginning to end. Those guys it amazes me that either one were standing at the end.
What weight class were they, Tony?
They were middleweights.
Middleweights?
Yeah, middleweights. Okay. I think Joey Giardello was in the Hurricane Carter movie where they made it look like the fight was thick. But even Hurricane Carter come on said, no, he legitimately beat it. But I think Joey Giardello was a middleweight champ, and I believe so was Joey Archer. Eventually, the Marciano Walcott fight was a great one, but a lot of people they think Marciano is just a pounder. But if you watch his fight, just see how many times he gets hit. He hardly ever gets hit. And that punch, and you know the punch I'm talking about in the Marciano fight, where he, you watch how he throws that. He feints with his left hand. Walcott ducks it, comes around and hits him with the right. I mean, that's a great move that you would not think Marciano would throw. Just throw the punch and hope it hits.
Well, he was considered to be a brawler. He was far from a brawler. Marciano was very skilled boxer. He understood the art of boxing, and that's why he was 49-0 in his career.
he very seldom ever got hit. When he did get hit, he got hit good, but he very seldom got hit. And a little known fact for this area, Jersey Joe Walcott, his manager was Felix Piquiccio, who happened to be from Atlas, right outside of Mount Carmel. And a lot of people don't know that. Now you do. So does your listening audience.
There you go, Tony. You've enlightened all of us. That's great.
Always an educational program.
Oh, there you go. Boxing today, I mean, I don't even know who the world champ is, heavyweight champ.
That's because there's 17 of them.
So, yeah. And I think what hurts, too, is, and it hurts with the...
It's also not an American. I think Klitschko is the heavyweight champion of the world.
The brother.
The brother is, And I think that's part of it.
Every good fight is pay-per-view. Not everybody can afford that. At one time.
Agreed.
Fuck everybody. And that hurts. People just, it's not on to watch, what I mean. So, well, listen, everybody have a good day, and stay away from the snow because it's bad out here.
Yeah, it is. We've got about 1-inch snowflakes here right now, Tony. Thank you.
Yeah, Vlad Klitschko is the current heavyweight champ.
Yeah. 800-795-9565. We go to Mark, who joins us. Hi, Mark.
Oh, I got a bone to pick with you now. The Max Baer James Braddock fight, June 1938. The greatest underdog fighter to come out. He was past his prime, and he gave it everything he got. And I don't know if you ever saw the movie Cinderella Man, but that's based on fact. And to leave him out of the top 10, that's unbelievable. That's just unbelievable. What a man he was. Unselfish and cared about his family. And that movie really moved me. Why I didn't get a couple Academy Awards, I don't know. But that fight should have been in the top 10.
Yeah, it was outstanding, the movie. Obviously.
Bear killed two guys. Go ahead.
I may be old, Mark, but I wasn't alive for that one.
Well, that's not the point. I'm not alive either. My father talked to me about it. Everybody was glued to the radios. I mean, everybody was pulling for the guy because he was one of them. I mean, kids in high school should see that movie. That really moved me, that movie. And I just had to call in and say, that's got to be in the top 10. You got to revise the list.
Well, and again, it's whomever the writer's personal opinion is, but that certainly is one of the... Because, I mean, Dempsey and Tunney didn't even make it.
Well, Braddock knocked Lewis down when they fought.
He did.
In the first round, and then the advisors to Lewis says, just stay away from him, his old legs will give out, and sure enough, they did. But Lewis had a lot of respect for Braddock. He said, if I'd have met him in his prime, it could have been one hell of a... He wouldn't guarantee a victory.
And when Lewis fought Marciano, Lewis was the one that was past his prime, and Marciano wore him down.
That's exactly right. It comes around. There's no question about that. But that movie moved me, and somebody ought to go back. And I mean, Max Baer killed a couple guys in the ring, and he knocked down that big Argentine fighter. I mean, that guy was a huge guy. It was unbelievable. I'm glad you saw the movie.
I did, and I enjoyed the movie very much. Russell Crowe did an outstanding job. Renee Zellweger played his wife. She was outstanding as well. Paul Giamatti, who played his manager Cornerman,
right,
was and trainer, was brilliant in that movie.
Yeah, and what I liked about it was the true statement about he fought for milk. He didn't want his kids going hungry anymore.
Right,
that depression was hard. It was really hard.
He was one of those who helped build the Verrazano Bridge.
He was one of the Americans. The Golden, the guys that fought in World War II, he fought in World War II.
Yes, he did.
All right, you have a good day. I'm a little broke up.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it very much. 800-795-9565. That was, first of all, my knowledge of the Braddock Baer fight is only through reading and through the movie itself. My understanding is the movie is pretty true to the story. There really is not very much artistic license taken with that.
Love Paul Giamatti in that, though. You're right. I love him in just
Paul
about
Giamatti,
anything.
Paul Giamatti was brilliant in that movie.
You know, one of the other ones that...
Well done.
I'm sorry. I was just going to say, you know, one of the other fights that, you know, is on a lot of people's list is Rumble in the Jungle, Ali Foreman in 74. That one only made a few of the lists that I was just scanning through here as well.
Yeah, well, eight rounds, and it's more of a strategy fight. It's not... Well, Ali's the underdog, which is a rarity for him. They're fighting in the heat, and it really is a lot of Foreman punching himself out, and then Ali, brilliantly understanding judging, basically fighting for 30 seconds at the end of each round. And then finally, in the eighth round, he tagged him. It is a significant fight, but is it one of the 10 greatest fights of all time? I think when it comes to pure action, the fights you're talking about are great action fights that go deep into the night. 12 is the current limit, but some of those went 15 rounds, right? That went eight rounds, and to be honest with you, it was not a great action fight. It was a brilliant strategy fight, but not a great action fight.
Yeah, and another thing that you and I were talking about during the news that I said surprised me, not a single... I've seen three or four lists now. It's like you said, it all depends on who's writing it, you know, what they were looking for in a great fight. But in the three or four lists, one Oscar De La Hoya fight, and that was, I think, the Trinidad fight.
Well, a lot of these fights took place... not within the last 5 years either.
That's the other thing, and I mentioned that before. If you're looking at a lot of these, there are few that are heavyweight fights and zero heavyweight fights within the last 20 years. Not a single Tyson fight made the list, mainly because those ended early. I mean, you paid $50 to see a Tyson fight. You got three rounds. You felt like you got your money's worth.
Well, I actually did go to the Sphinx Tyson deal that ended in 90 seconds. We all looked at each other like, really? I mean, he beat the daylights out of him in 90 seconds. But the problem with Tyson, even when he lost to Buster Douglas, not even that was a great fight.
Tyson's timing was perfect in heavyweight boxing. I mean, believe me, he had an anvil for a right hand. There's no question about that. But his timing was perfect, because there really wasn't a dominating fighter or anybody in the heavyweight field that was really challenging at that point. I mean, right. Name one. Lennox Lewis Duran was after him.
Yeah, did Duran Leonard make
a couple of them? Yeah, yeah. There were. I mean, Duran Leonard.
I'm talking about the 15 rounder in Montreal. I'm not talking about the No Mas fight.
I can't remember which one it was, but there were a few.
The 15 rounder in Montreal was really a great action fight of contrasting styles. And that's part of this, too, is the style of it. What made Ali Frazier intriguing? Contrasting styles. You know, the fact that, you know, that Frazier was left-handed. He would come, he wanted to fight forward. You know, Ali would be on his toes and move, but Ali could get in the middle of the ring, and to his credit, he could go toe-to-toe with you. What made Hagler and Leonard intriguing? Again, Hagler moving forward all the time. Leonard, you know, a different style. Duran Leonard was the same way, different styles. And that's a big part of what makes a great fight, are the styles of the fighters make a big difference. Two guys, same style, trying to battle it out there. You know, you can get a great action fight out of that, but contrasting styles usually brings with it some great stuff. And you look at what Sugar Ray Robinson and Raging Bull.
I know what you're talking about too, but I can't think of it either.
Yeah, but when they fought five times. And they're different styles. Jake LaMotta. Jake LaMotta and Sugar Ray Robinson are different styles. And it made for great fights.
What was the other Leonard fight that was always so popular? It went a couple of times. Not Hearns or Hagler. Yeah. There was another one.
Well, I know he took the title from Wilfred Benitez. I remember
that's
that.
Not the one I was thinking of, though, but I it'll hit me.
Hangler, Hearns, Duran, a whole bunch of them.
Duran. Roberto Duran. That was the one I was thinking of.
All right. Well, I talked about that, the Montreal fight.
Yeah. Roberto Duran was the one I was thinking about when you're talking about. Right. If I remember right, there was a little
contrast in styles.
Right.
I mean, and styles mean everything. And that's why boxing is simple yet complicated at the same time. You know, how you box, the strategy you use, and so forth. But you're confined in a 20 by 20 ring. It's also easy for television to cover because it is a 20 by 20 ring. It's confined. And it illustrates how style makes a difference to go with your skill. And this we talk about in sports all the time. Why do I talk so much about matchups? Matchups mean everything in sports. That's why I was interviewing this women's hockey coach about a month ago. And so, you know, they were about to play a playoff game. And I'm interviewing about the playoff game. I said, look, you played them four times during the course of the year. I said, matchups are important. What's a matchup that you feel that you need to clean up that can swing this your way? And he said, well, it's all about us. It's all about the process. It's all about us. All about the process. And I said, nobody wants to hear this. And that's not sports. It's about us and it's about the process. And guess what? I'm going to go to the game. Guess what? You lost. Your process stinks. All right, we'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. I guess Kevin took boxing lessons as a kid and got hit a couple times, and he went back to the corner, and I guess, you know, all of a sudden he looks out, and he said, what should I do? And they said, hit the one in the middle. Says, this is not good. This is not good. That tells me you should quit.
Cut me, Mick.
Cut me, Mick.
You know, and there's one that didn't make any of the lists. I don't understand that.
Yeah, I do.
I don't get that. Rocky didn't make any of the lists.
Coming up on Friday, coming up tomorrow, Stephen Gross, Allentown Morning Call on the Phillies. We're going to get some Phillies talk on tomorrow. Matt LaPay, play-by-play voice, Wisconsin basketball on Friday's show to preview their matchup with Kentucky. Will Tiemann, play-by-play voice, Michigan State basketball to preview their matchup with Duke at the Final Four. Rick Barnes has signed his deal. He's the head basketball coach at Tennessee. Greg Marshall at Wichita State interviewing at Alabama. Shaka Smart at VCU is interviewing at Texas. And Travis Ford, the head basketball coach at Oregon State, 50-50 right now as to what's going to happen. And his buyout is $9.6 million. Walter Pitchford is going to skip his final year of eligibility at Nebraska to enter the NBA draft. I have one major three-letter word for him. Why? That was one of the areas where, for example, I could tell you, when they matched up, when he was in the game, Penn State ate them alive. I could not wait for them to put him back in the game. But he is not coming back. Transferred in from Florida, he's 6'10". Good outside shooter. But that's the problem. He's 6'10". He's a good outside shooter. You need him to mix it up inside. Already 250 players have announced they're transferring. It looks like the waiver wire. Let's see. Oh, by the way, Chris Mullen will be the head coach at St. John's. The Mid-American Conference says they will not hold any championships in the state of Indiana.
And Jameis Winston had a strong pro day.
Yes, you watched it. And then complained to the audience that you watched it.
Listen, I was watching. I'll be honest with you. I was watching it, but not close enough to see whether he had a strong pro day or not. There were a couple of passes on the sideline that I thought were more out of bounds than inbounds, but...
But you watched it, and you complained to the audience that you watched it.
No, I didn't. I glanced at the screen and then continued to watch HBO Go, okay? That's exactly what happened.
You watched it.
And the other thing is, I'm not a huge fan of pro days, personally, as a football fan, because watching a guy throw against an offensive line that consists of four bags and no corners defending the receiver, I question what it shows. Now, I could be way off base here, Steve, and I'm willing to admit that, but I question what it shows.
Oh, it shows several things. Shows, are you accurate? Do you lead receivers into yards after the catch? How do you make that throw from one hash mark across the field to the other one on an out? How do you throw into traffic over the middle? Now, it's not going to show you with pressure with guys consumed with hate trying to chase you down, but it does show the basics of what you can do throwing the football. That's what it shows.
I want to see somebody take a risk and put a corner out there.
I understand that, but for example, I can tell you right now, I watched Christian Hackenberg throw the ball. He's throwing the ball with greater velocity now than at any point I've watched him in 3 years. Greater velocity. And I can see him when he warms up. I can see when he's in a drill. You know, a lot of things. I mean, look, there are a lot of drills that you run out there. Not every drill is against somebody else.
I'm just saying, if you're a scout and you're looking to make your opinion, are you going to look more at the film that you have on him, or are you going to look at the pro day?
I got to look at both, because I've got to be able to look at a film and say, okay, this is what he did against that defense. Okay, he's pretty accurate in pressure. This is how his footwork happens to be. Now I go to watch him live. When I watch him live, I sit back and go, you know what? The arm strength matches what I saw in film. You know what? The arm strength doesn't quite match up with what I saw in film. You know, going there live gives you a better feel of what you're going to see as you watch him on the sideline as opposed to just watching on a film. Remember what I talked about? Why it's difficult going and taking... changing conferences with a team or taking a job in another conference is having to know all 11 teams or 12 teams without ever having seen them live before, because it gives you a better feel live.